Syria holds a funeral procession for dozens of people killed in a terrorist attack at a military academy in Homs. And Britain's opposition Labour Party wins a parliamentary seat in Scotland, seen as a path to power in next year's general vote. Hello and welcome, everybody. Nearly 80 Palestinians rather have been injured as Israeli forces attack mourners attending the funeral procession of a man in the occupied West Bank. Thousands attended the funeral of 19-year-old Labib Dumaidi, who was fatally shot by Israeli settlers during their raid on the town of Huwara, south of Nablus. Israeli troops used live rounds, rubber bullets, tear gas, and sound bombs against the mourners. The Palestinians were chanting slogans against the use of violence by Israeli forces and settlers, and in support of the resistance. The mourners also called for avenging the blood of Palestinians. The Hamas resistance movement also stressed that Palestinian resistance will eventually put an end to Israeli occupation. Mona Candila is joining us now from Ramallah. The Israelis have now attacked mourners attending a funeral procession of a man who was earlier killed in the occupied West Bank. It seems that there's no limit at this point for the level of aggression and deadly raids that the Israelis are carrying out.
First of all, 19-year-old Palestinian Labib Dumaidi was killed by Israeli settlers' fire when he and other Palestinian residents of the village of Huwara tried to stand against and face the aggression and the oppression of the Israeli settlers last night, when the settlers attacked the people and their homes and their properties. Dumaidi was killed by the Israeli settlers. And today, during the funeral procession, when thousands of Palestinians took part in the funeral procession and took his body from the hospital of Rafidia in Nablus, northern the occupied West Bank, and took it to his hometown village of Huwara, the mourners had been attacked by the Israeli forces, who Palestinians were chanting anti-Israeli slogans and were vowing to avenge the killing of this young Palestinian, and they also were saying that they will continue on their way of resistance. This had angered the Israeli forces, of course. They attacked the people. They used live rounds, wounding dozens of Palestinians. At least 80 Palestinians were wounded, according to the Palestinian Ministry of Health. More than 20 of them had been shot with live rounds. At the same time, the military checkpoint of Huwara had been completely closed for the second day after the attacks of the settlers yesterday. It's for the second day, it's completely closed, and Palestinians cannot travel or transport from the central, the occupied West Bank, to northern, the occupied West Bank, because this military checkpoint of Huwara is located at the entrance of a number of Palestinian cities, like Nablus. It leads to Nablus, to Jenin, to Kerem, and Qalqilia. And so it's yet another aggression being committed by the Israeli forces against the Palestinians.
All right, thanks a lot. Mona Candil joining us from Ramallah. Syria has held a funeral procession for the people killed in a terror attack on a military academy in the western city of Homs. The funeral was held outside a military hospital in central Homs. The defense minister was in attendance. General Ali Abbas said Syria is paying the price for its dignity and prosperity. On Thursday, several weaponized drones struck a graduation ceremony for army officers at the Homs Military Academy. Families of the new officers were there when the attack took place. According to the Syrian government, 89 people, including 5 children, were killed and nearly 280 people were injured. A UK-based war monitor has put the death toll at 110. Syria has declared 3 days of public mourning. The terrorist drone attack has drawn condolences and condemnations from across the world. The Iranian president pointed the finger at terrorist foreign supporters, including those occupying Syria.
Indeed, the responsibility for this tragic event lies with the foreign supporters of terrorist groups, including those occupying Syria, and preventing the enforcement of national sovereignty across the Syrian territory and the effective combat against terrorism. It's expected that relevant international organizations, particularly the UN Security Council, fulfill their responsibility in this regard.
Raisi said, giving Daesh and other Takfiri terrorists breathing room to carry out their operations completes the Israeli acts of aggression against Syria. President Vladimir Putin also reaffirmed Russia's resolve to continue close cooperation with Syria in combating terrorism in all its shapes and forms. Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko also stressed that the international community should not turn a blind eye to the scourge. In Lebanon, the resistance movement Hezbollah said the attack shows that a foreign-backed conspiracy is underway in Syria and stressed its support for Damascus. Palestine's Islamic Jihad resistance movement also expressed confidence that Syria will remain steadfast in the face of plots targeting its unity. Yemen's Ansar Allah movement added that the U.S. and Israel are behind all plots against Syria because of its support for resistance. The UAE, Egypt, and Venezuela have also condemned the attack in Homs. Journalist and activist Sabiba Jahoudi explains why some Western states, especially the U.S., continue to back terrorist groups in Syria despite all the harm they are inflicting on people there.
Unfortunately, there's not a limit to terrorist groups inside of Syria armed by the West. We have the armed rebels who are backed by Western countries with weapons, with policies, with propaganda. So I don't know why no one has claimed responsibility yet. I'm sure that the signs are all there. It's very evident. As Mike Pompeo has said, we lied, we cheated, we stole, we had an entire training course. It reminds you of the glory of the American experiment. He boasted about this at a university conference back in Texas. This was in 2021, still. I just think that the fact that the U.S. has blatantly admitted again and again to arming these terrorists, as mentioned before, the WikiLeaks, Hillary Clinton's emails, all of this shows how disingenuous they are about their claims for human rights, about their claims for anti-terror tactics. They have a reason to be in Syria, and they have a reason to exploit and plunder Syria's resources, at the same time try and attempt to overthrow Syria's democratically elected government to undermine Syrian sovereignty, self-determination, and democracy, because Syria is one of the countries in that region that has been standing strong against Israel, and Israel works as an ally, Israel works as a lapdog for the United States and Australia.
Britain's Labour Party has won a by-election for a parliamentary seat in Scotland. The leader of the opposition party has hailed it as a seismic result. Earlier, our correspondent in London, Syed Pudoza, joined us for more on that.
But why is this significant? It's one way, one reason it's significant because it's a barometer of a Labour revival, if you will, in Scotland, and also its national appeal, Labour Party's national appeal against the SNP, and of course the Tories, the Conservatives, who remain very unpopular, Labour having a 20-point lead against the Conservative Party, nationally speaking. It's also significant because Labour could make significant inroads in elections next year that might give it the margin it needs to amass more votes against the SNP and against the Tories in the elections next year. What it also means, Varya, is the SNP's collapsing fortunes in the wake of, in February, of Nicola Sturgeon, the former First Minister's resignation, and that a financial scandal that hit the SNP involving Nicola Sturgeon's husband, was party leader at the time, misusing donations to the SNP, that money that should have been invested or was donated to be invested in a possible next referendum on Scottish independence.
Ukraine says a Russian strike at a village in the northeast of the country has left 52 people dead. The people had gathered for a wake when the strike happened. Ukrainian officials say a Russian missile slammed into a cafe and grocery store in Groza village, Kharkiv region. They've called the attack the single deadliest since the war began with Russia in February last year. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky says it was not a blind attack, accusing Moscow of conducting such strikes every day.
I believe that nothing but Air Force, especially during winter, can protect those people that absolutely tragically died because of this inhumane terrorist attack.
Zelensky was speaking at a European political community summit in Spain. He said he has secured agreements for more air defense systems and artillery supplies to Kiev. Meanwhile, the United Nations, as well as the US, UK, and Germany, have condemned the missile strike in Ukraine. Russia has reacted, saying its military does not strike civilian targets. It says strikes are carried out on military targets and on places where military personnel are concentrated. Sweden says that it will send a new military aid package for Ukraine that mainly consists of artillery ammunition. Defense Minister Paul Johnson says the aid is worth nearly $200 million. He says Sweden is also looking into sending fighter jets to Ukraine. He added that that will be decided after armed forces present their report on the potential supply by early November. The latest military aid is the 14th Sweden is sending to Ukraine since it entered the war with Russia last year. Other Western states have also provided Kiev with different kinds of weapons. That has drawn strong criticism from Moscow. It argues that the Western support fans the flames of the war. Pro-Russian party has won general elections in NATO member states, Slovakia. Leftist Smer SD, led by former Premier Robert Fico, obtained over 23% of the vote. Fico seeks to end military aid to Ukraine and is critical of the European Union and NATO. His victory is seen as a sign of wavering support for Ukraine in the EU.
As the war drags on in Ukraine, signs are emerging that do not bode well for the US-led coalition against Russia. Just days ago, the Slovak Social Democracy Party, which is a pro-Russia party, won the country's parliamentary elections. The leftist Smer SD party, led by former Premier Robert Fico, has not secured enough votes to form a government and needs to form a coalition with other parties. But the victory has been interpreted as a sign of growing war fatigue in Europe. The party's leader has said that no more weapons would go to Ukraine. He has also questioned the logic of the EU's Russia sanctions and even accused NATO of causing the war.
I believe that on the one hand, yes, we should expect a certain, let's say, uncomfortable relationship between Brussels and Slovakia. But then on the other hand, I also think that the relationship will also be rather pragmatic. However, the danger is real when it comes to Slovakia's declining support to Ukraine. And this will also have its impact to weaken the EU's unity when it comes to its support for Ukraine.
Just weeks ago, Poland, a staunch ally of Ukraine, announced that it would no longer supply weapons to its neighbor amid a diplomatic dispute over Kiev's grain exports. Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki has said that Poland's focus was instead on defending itself with more modern weapons. The country's president later tried to modify their stance, but the dispute is seen as a rift among members of the anti-Moscow alliance. Poland has supplied hundreds of Soviet-era tanks and 14 MiG-29 fighter jets to Ukraine and served as a major transit hub for weapons from other Western nations. These developments have stirred talk of a global shift in sentiment towards supporting Ukraine as the war grinds on, more than a year and a half after it began.
It is full of Ukrainians here. This is what I seriously do not like. They get benefits, energy costs went up, everything went up. So basically, they are getting benefits, and we, our citizens, we pay.
Western nations led by the United States have poured billions of dollars in military aid to Ukraine since the war began with Russia in February last year. However, there are now signs that ordinary people in the EU and the U.S. have become weary of that support. Just this week, German protesters rallied in major cities to protest their country's military support for Ukraine.
The money spent on the war in Ukraine has unnerved many citizens in European countries. Days ago, hundreds of people staged rallies in different German cities to vent their anger at Berlin's growing support for Ukraine. Many protesters carried banners and placards advocating for peace in Ukraine while expressing opposition to government policies, including the remilitarization of Germany. Demonstrators said Germany's decision to send more weaponry to Ukraine risks escalation of the conflict with Russia. Some protesters demanded that Germany pull out from the NATO alliance. Some said the United States is benefiting from Germany's intervention in the Russia-Ukraine war. Germany is among Western countries that have provided Ukraine with a wide range of weapons since the war erupted in February 2022.
I'm mainly concerned with crisis intervention and resolving this armed conflict on the one hand. On the other hand, of course, there are trends in the militarization of Germany. After all, from a purely political point of view, Germany is right in the middle, and America is shamelessly taking advantage of that too, using citizens through media policy to perhaps ultimately use them for their own goals, and Ukrainian citizens were also exploited.
The German economy has suffered due to crisis in Ukraine. It tipped into a recession at the start of the year and stagnated in the second quarter. High inflation, industrial slowdown, and reduction in global demand for manufactured goods have all been weighing on the German economy. And earlier in October, dozens of anti-war activists in New York City said that the interest of NATO depends on the perpetuation of imperial capital and extraction of wealth from the dispossessed.
Unification of peace forces in the United States, recognizing that it's the United States and NATO who are are to blame and the fundamental cause of the conflict in Ukraine, and that if we can force the U.S. government to stop sending money and weapons to Ukraine, the war will end the very next day.
A poll conducted in August said most Americans oppose Congress authorizing additional funding. Overall, 55% say the U.S. Congress should not authorize additional funding to support Ukraine versus 45% who say Congress should authorize such funding. And 51% say that the U.S. has already done enough to help Ukraine. The removal of Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House of Representatives has added to the uncertainty around aid for Ukraine.
The Venezuelan prosecutor's office says it has issued an arrest warrant for opposition leader Juan Guaido.
The prosecutors issued an arrest warrant for Guaido and the respective Interpol red notice so that this man pays for the crimes the justice system in the United States knows and shares.
Guaido is accused of treason and money laundering, among others. He has used resources of Venezuela's public oil giant PDVSA to cost some $19 billion in losses. That's according to authorities in Caracas. They say Guaido relied on revelations provided to the press by U.S. federal court. Guaido is now living in exile in the U.S. Back in 2019, he proclaimed himself as interim president of Venezuela, challenging the re-election of President Nicolas Maduro. At the time, the U.S. and European countries threw their support behind Guaido. Last year, the Venezuelan opposition formally ended his position as acting president. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In Britain, some 28% of the public are saying they're eating less nutritious food because it is too expensive, according to a BBC Good Food Nation survey. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. More than a quarter of consumers in Britain are eating less healthily due to the cost of living crisis, including turning increasingly to ready meals and processed foods, a new study has suggested. More than two-thirds of people, or 69%, consider themselves to be healthy eaters, but 28% say they're eating less nutritious food because it is too expensive, with 19% of the public reporting that they're eating more ready meals and processed food because they are cheaper, according to a BBC Good Food Nation survey. The poll found 17% of people are cooking less from scratch and 16% are cutting back on organic food and ingredients because of the cost of living crisis. Some 12% say they're eating less protein because the cost is too high. Some 28% have changed their supermarket due to the cost of living considerations. Overall, 61% say the cost of living has impacted their healthy eating habits in some way, including being more conscious of eating healthily because they cannot afford to get sick, that's 18%, and eating less healthily because of stress, that's 15%. Christine Hayes, editor, editor-in-chief of BBC Good Food, said, "The BBC Good Food Nation survey shows we consider ourselves a nation of healthy eaters and we care about what we eat. However, rising costs have impacted choices and compromises have had to be made with people buying more processed food and ready meals and swapping supermarkets to save money. More than a third of consumers in Britain, that is 36%, said they are producing fewer leftovers now, with their reasons being to save money, 59%, because they are meal planning more carefully, 44%, and 34% say they want to reduce waste to help the planet. The four most common foods people throw away are salad leaves, 31%, bread, 29%, fruit, 24%, and vegetables, 23%. Census-wide surveyed 2013 British consumers between 10th and 14th of August this year. British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story and tells us more. British families are eating less healthily and turning to ready meals and processed foods due to the cost of living crisis, a new study has found. More than two-thirds of people, that is 69%, say they considered themselves to be healthy eaters, but 28% say they were eating less nutritious food because it is too expensive. That's according to a BBC Good Food Nation survey. The study of 2013 adults across Britain found that 19% are eating more ready meals and processed foods because they are cheaper, while 17% are cooking less from scratch. The survey, which looks at shopping, cooking and eating habits, found that 3 in 5 people, or 60%, have changed what they eat due to the rising cost of ingredients. This includes 16% who say they have cut back on organic ingredients and 12% who say they were eating less protein as they struggled to cope with higher food prices. The study found that 15% are taking more packed lunches to work to save money. Meanwhile, over a quarter of the British people, or 28% of respondents, say they had changed their supermarket because of the cost of living crisis, and 4% said they had used food banks or alternatives to shops. More than two-thirds of people, that is 68%, said prices was the most important factor when picking a supermarket. Overall, 61% of the British public said the cost of living crisis had affected their healthy eating habits in some way, including being more conscious of eating healthily because they cannot afford to get sick, that's 18%, and eating less healthily due to stress, that's 15%. The poll found that 13% said they were eating less healthily due to having less time to cook because of working longer hours. More than a third of respondents, or 36%, said they were producing fewer leftovers, with their reasons being to save money, 59%. Because they're meal planning more carefully, 44%, and to reduce waste to help the planet, 34%. The survey found that the four most common foods people throw away were salad leaves, 31%, bread, 29%, fruit, 24%, and vegetables, 23%. Christine Hayes, editor-in-chief of BBC Good Food, says the survey shows that we consider ourselves a nation of healthy eaters and we care about what we eat. However, rising costs of food have impacted choices and compromises have had to be made, with people buying more processed food and ready meals and swapping supermarkets to save money. But increasing costs have not stopped households from embracing technological innovations. Almost half of those surveyed, or 46%, said they owed an air fryer, while another 23% said they were planning to purchase an air fryer. Meanwhile, 1 in 7 people, or 14%, said they had used artificial intelligence tools to create a recipe, and 12% had used them to create a shopping list. Christine Hayes, editor-in-chief of BBC Good Food, says the BBC Good Food Nation findings show we embrace innovations in food preparation. Air fryers are now part of our everyday lives. Sue Davies, of the head of food policy at Which, said, "These findings echo our own research findings that many people are finding it more difficult to eat healthily, as millions of people struggle with increased food prices and other high household bills. Supermarkets have an important role supporting people through this crisis. This includes helping customers who rely on more expensive convenience stores by ensuring they stock a range of budget products that enable people to have a healthy diet."
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri wa salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
Tonight, as we continue in this series of this pure life, this Islamic life, I want to take our minds and our discussion to the next level and look at a topic which is really the foundational block of this religion of Islam. And that is about Tawheed, what we would very, very roughly translate as monotheism, the oneness of God. One of the reasons why we are expected to not only have the theoretical Tawheed, but to make it our worldview, that the way that we look at everything around us, that it becomes based on Tawheed, is because of the fact that whatever people do in this world is normally based upon their own motive, their own motivation, right? The niyyah, the intention, why we people do things. Everybody does things for their own personal reasons. And Allah, you know, mentions this in the Quran in chapter 17, verse number 86, where he says, "Kullun ya'malu ala shakilatihi," that everybody does work or stuff based on their own personal reasons. Right? There are those who do things for fame, for their, you know, TikTok moment, to get famous on Instagram, to get famous on social media. People do stuff. There are people who do things even on, you know, in terms of religion. They do things because they think they will get more, you know, likes on social media. They'll get more invitations. You know, people even pray, unfortunately, sometimes, not for Allah, but for others around them. You know, it's like this story that people quote. I don't know if it really happened, but the story says that one day there's a Muslim in the masjid. He walks into the mosque, probably in the Middle East, because they're open all the time. And the man goes in the masjid and he starts to pray, Allahu Akbar. He starts the first surah. And then as he's praying, he hears some noise behind him. So he thinks to himself in the middle of prayers, oh, somebody's come into the mosque. Let me kind of show off, you know, and recite a longer surah. Make a longer dua in kunut. And so he goes and he makes the longest prayer he's ever prayed. Long surah of the Quran, a long dua in kunut, a long ruku, an extra long sajda. He takes a 2-rakat prayer, which would normally take him maybe a minute and a half, and it's extended to like 5 or 6 minutes. He finishes that prayer to see who is behind him. He turns around and a cat walked into the mosque. So he made a beautiful prayer for a cat, thinking that that was somebody who would be amazed by his prayer. So his reward is not with Allah on the Day of Judgment. That cat will have to give him the reward. So people act, people do stuff because of other people, unfortunately. And even people worship other than Allah. I don't mean idol worshippers. I don't mean people that worship in a temple. No, Allah tells us, أَرَأَيْتَ مَنْ اتَّخَذَ إِلَاهَهُ هَوَى. Have you seen those people that take their lower desires, their whims, their passions to be their God? They worship the self. Right? They worship their own egos. Why do people take selfies? You know, up until 15, 16 years ago, there was no word called selfie because we didn't have phones with front-facing cameras. But once those came into being and people started taking selfies, it's because you want to be seen. I want to be seen in the public, you know, on a beach or doing some activity or having fun and showing the world what I'm doing. Right? It all became about the self, the nafs, the ego, me. I want to be center stage, the limelight. أَرَأَيْتَ مَنِ اتَّخَذَ إِلَاهُهُ هَوَى. This verse is so relevant to that concept that it's almost like Allah revealed it for this era. People that would take themselves as being the focal point in society. And ultimately, when people get to that level, they begin to forget Allah. And as Allah says in the Quran, He takes it further and He says that when you forget Allah, Allah allows you to forget yourself. Right? You lose direction in life. You lose that life, that life that Allah and the Messenger call us towards that we talked about last night. And we become people that are the worst of the worst. In fact, there's a hadith I want to share with us. It's narrated from Amir al-Mu'mineen, and also it comes to us from the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. And it's a very harsh hadith. You know, but when it comes to speaking truth, the Prophet and Imams, they don't mince their words. If they have to be a bit harsh and forthcoming, and maybe what we might consider as being abrasive or rude, they say it, just as the Quran, right? Many times Allah says in the Quran that Allah is not scared of the truth, right? Allah is not embarrassed to tell the truth and tell it like it is. Even when the Sahaba, the companions, would come to the house of the Prophet, and they would come and eat food, and they would sit around and chill with the Prophet and chit-chat and talk and waste his time, Allah says in the Quran that the Prophet wants you to leave, but he has too much humility, too much greatness to ask you to leave. But the verse says Allah is not embarrassed, and Allah will tell you. Allah will call a spade and tell you, get out of the house of the Prophet. Eat, finish your conversation, then leave. The Prophet has wife, he has got family, he's got things to do. Don't sit there and just, you know, take up his time. So Allah is not scared to tell the truth. So what does the Prophet say? What does Imam Ali say about people that use this world and it becomes their God, their focal point? Everything centers around them. The hadith says, "Man kana himmatuhu ma yadkhulu batnahu, kana qimatuhu ma yakhruju min batnihi." It's a pretty harsh hadith. He says that that person whose ambitions and endeavors are solely focused on what goes into their stomach, their whole life is about what you eat. You know, you see these TV shows on the channels of Master Chef and cooking and all of these things to make the food look exactly how it should be. People spend hours prepping food. I'm not saying we don't do that, but we eat good food, but going overboard in extremes. The Imam is quoted as saying that that person whose entire focus is what they consume, their worth in life is what comes out at the end. Now you know what comes out at the end. So imagine the Imam is saying that when your entire focus is this dunya and this world, your worth is just what comes out in the toilet. But you don't have any worth because your self-worth is now gone. You're only looking at your own passions, your own whims, your own desires. And so in order to wrap up and conclude, we remind ourselves that a true follower on this path of seeking life, استجيبوا لله ولرسوله إذا دعاكم لما يحييكم, as chapter 8 said, answer the call of Allah and the Messenger when they call you to that which gives you life, is that we need to go back to Tawheed. Not just God is one, and now we're done as people who believe in Tawheed. No, that we internalize Tawheed. We recognize that not only is there only one God, but everything that we do from the time we wake up till the time we go to sleep, from the time we become mentally aware, we become baligh, we know our responsibilities, until the time we die, whether it's in this center, it's at work, it's at school, it's in the mall, it's in the park, that all of this becomes something and things that we do based on the world outlook of Tawheed, on the oneness of Allah. There's no doubt that we have to study the theoretical aspect, and there are great books written by our great scholars that have analyzed Tawheed and given us the in-depth understanding of Tawheed. But once we've understood the theory of Tawheed, that's where we then go to the practical. That now, how do I color every day of my life with the color of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? As Allah says in the Quran, Sibghatullah. وَمَنْ أَحْسَنُ مِنَ اللَّهِ صِبْغًا, that take on the color of Allah. Take on this appearance of Allah. Now Allah doesn't have a color. Allah doesn't have a shape. But what he's saying is sibghat Allah is take on the qualities of Allah. Take on the characteristics. Become a true follower of Allah. Become one with Allah. Not in a physical sense, not in a sense of, you know, that we morph with Allah or that we merge into Allah. No, but that we become one with Allah, that our entire lives become patterned on the life that Allah wants us to lead. And that life can be epitomized when we follow the Prophet and his family, the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim wassalatu wassalam.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Kareemun Azim Alimul Halim Hakimun Mateen شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمن
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Six in ten Americans think the country has become more dangerous since President Joe Biden entered office, and only 14% think his administration has done a good job tackling crime. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Investors Business Daily has reported on the story and tells us more. The new IBD TIPP poll found US President Joe Biden's approval rating has fallen to the lowest level since he took office. Disapproval of Biden's economic policies is reaching new heights as financial stress spikes amid rising interest rates, higher gas prices, and renewed student loan payments. The October IBD TIPP poll shows 36% of the American public, aged 18 and upwards, approve of how Biden is handling the presidency, and 54% disapprove. Biden's net approval rating crashed to minus 18 points from minus 8 points in September, when 41% approved and 49% disapproved of Biden's job performance. September's bounce in Biden's approval rating after 2 months at 38% to 51% proved fleeting. October's IBD TIPP poll showed 73% of Democrats now give Joe Biden positive marks, while 17% disapprove of his job performance. That's down slightly from 75% to 16% in September. Biden's weakness among independents grew a bit more dire. Now 59% of independents pan Biden's job performance and 26% approve, versus 58% disapproval and 29% approval in September. Republican disapproval of Biden grew, just a touch more extreme. GOP voters now disapprove of Biden 89% to 7%, versus 86% and 9% last month. Biden's approval rating among poll participants earning up to $75,000 actually was unchanged from September, with 35% approval and 54% disapproval. Yet Biden's support fell off a cliff among those earning more than $75,000 a year. This group of higher earners now disapproves of Joe Biden 54% to 39%. Joe Biden is back underwater among higher earners after 59% approval and 35% disapproval in September. Prior to that, higher earners disapproved of Biden 48% to 41.5% and 47% to 43% in August and July. Biden's approval among college graduates is now also underwater, with 44% approval and 48% disapproval. That's a big come down after a positive approval of 53% to 40% in September and 50% to 44% in August. The resumption of federal student loan payments after a 3.5-year moratorium and the striking down of Biden's loan forgiveness program may be a factor. President Biden's job approval rating among adults aged 18 to 44 also turned negative, with 35% approval and 49% disapproval, versus 46% to 41% in September. Adults 45 and over continue to widely disapprove of Joe Biden's job performance, 57% to 37%, little change from 56.5% to 37% in September. Americans now disapprove of Joe Biden's economic policies more than 2-1, 56% to 24%. That's a big deterioration from 50% to 31% in September. Inflation is undoubtedly a major source of Biden's poor economic reviews. Labor Department data shows U.S. employers added more than 13.45 million jobs in the first 31 months of Biden's presidency. Meanwhile, the average hourly wage has grown a solid 4.3% over the past year. Yet inflation has eaten away all of that increase and more for many Americans. The IBD-TIPP opinion poll finds that just 16% of adults say their wages has kept pace with inflation, down from 20% in September. Meanwhile, 60% say they haven't kept up versus 54% last month. The opinion poll responses don't necessarily line up with official inflation numbers. The Labor Department says real average hourly earnings rose 0.5% over the past year, meaning that wages have slightly outpaced inflation for the average worker. Still, with higher interest rates, renewed student loan payments and higher gas prices all taking a toll, the IBD-TIPP index, measuring financial-related stress, jumped 2.4 percentage points to 70.5%. That's above the 69.8 reading in April of 2020, just after the COVID lockdown, and the highest since December of 2008. Reading above 50 indicates rising stress. A surge in border crossings and the declaration of a migrant crisis in cities like New York may also be eroding support for Joe Biden. Disapproval of his immigration policies rose to 56%, 20% in October, from 51% to 26% in the previous months. Now 35% of adults list immigration as one of their top three concerns, up from 27% a month ago. Joe Biden's approval rating among investors dived underwater to 45% to 50% in October, from positive approval of 56% to 40% in September. The IBD-TIPP opinion poll counts as investors those respondents who say they have at least $10,000 in household-owned mutual funds or equities. The stock market had its worst month of the year in September, following a dramatic rally this year fueled by artificial intelligence stocks. Through Friday, the Standard & Poor's 500 index has lost 6.6% from its 52-week high on 31st of July, but remains up 20% from its 12th of October bear market closing low. Since Election Day on 3rd of November 2020, the Standard & Poor's 500 index is up 27.3%. The president's bigger problem is among non-investors who now disapprove of his job performance 55% to 33%, a touch worse than last month's 54% to 35% split.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghodde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this program, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a part of a speech delivered by Ayatollah Khamenei, leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the representatives of the people from the provinces of Sistan and Baluchistan and Fars Khorasan. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 11, 2023. Thank God our nation is awake. I am very optimistic and hopeful about our dear nation being awake because of what we have experienced during these 40 years, not because of slogans, battle cries, and the like. We have experienced and witnessed things. This optimism is based on the things that we see in the youth of this country. Their loyalty, their devotion and sincerity they show, and their good participation in events such as Arba'in Walk, which I briefly talk about in a moment, these are signs for hope. We must move forward with the same strength, with the same motivation, and with the same faith. The enemy is serious in its enmity and its schemes. We too are extremely serious in confronting the enemy. At the end of my speech, I would like to thank the people of Iraq for the valuable hospitality and service during the Arba'in. What they did was extraordinary. The Iraqi people gave everything they had for many days in serving and hosting more than 22 million pilgrims walking from Najaf to Karbala or from Qazamain or Al-Qazamiyah to Karbala. They truly deserve to be thanked.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I would like to extend my sincere gratitude to our Iraqi brothers and sisters. I would like to thank the Iraqi officials, and I would also like to particularly thank Hashd al-Shaabi. I thank the Iraqi police force and the Iraqi government for maintaining security during this time. What these people have done is remarkable. I would also like to extend my sincere gratitude to our own police force. Our police force truly worked hard around the clock and put their minds to work with regard to people's transportation and border issues. These are very valuable matters. We must appreciate these dedicated forces and these good young people who work in different sectors. We need to protect one another. We need to respect each other. And we need to have mercy on each other. God too will show us His mercy, God willing. O Lord, by Muhammad and Muhammad's progeny, send your blessings and mercy upon the Iranian nation and on the people of these two provinces. May God's greetings, mercy, and blessings be upon you all.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.